People are already sick due to the radioactive waste left by the French company.
There are people 7 kilometers away from the quarries. That's what we have to bear in mind. Everyone is worried. People are sick. Someone who spends 40 years running a uranium chain, how can we say that these people will not get sick?
To discuss this environmental crime by the French multinational in Niger, we have contacted Mustafa Traore, an academic and political commentator. Thanks for your time. Now, it's mind-boggling that a French company can leave over 20 million tons of radioactive waste in Niger. Now, this can only happen in Africa. What's the reason for such impunity?
Yes, I think that you're right, it's not fair, but we all understand that when it comes to human rights, when it comes to the international community, they have to respect the rights of minorities and those who are being exploited, there's no justice. So this is a perfect illustration of the situation. We have a rich country spoiling the soil and polluting a country, and nothing is done about it. So it's not the first time, but this is a perfect illustration of how unfair the international law and international organizations are. And we see it here. And I'm more surprised by the fact that no one is complaining. Normally, it should be maybe a country that is a permanent member of the UN that should react and try to defend the rights of Niger, but no one is doing it. And it seems that you know about it because you probably live or you are interested in the topic, but I can tell you that in the French news, there's nothing written about it.
Niger, a leading uranium producer in the world, is a strategic supplier for France, while its people are gripped by poverty and environmental disaster.
If you look at Niger, it is among the 10 poorest countries in the world. When you look at the GDP of Niger, you have countries like Mali, Burkina Faso that are even doing better than Niger. And these countries have decided to expel the French and all the other colonizers very recently.
The U.S. has a massive drone base in Niger for its military operations in the country and across the Sahel. France is also relocating its troops from other West African countries to Niger.
Mr. Traore, do you think these foreign military forces are in Niger to oversee the looting of uranium instead of combating terrorism as they claim?
Creating instability enables them to better exploit the land. Just imagine if, in fact, Niger was a safe country with a very strong government trying and working for its population. They wouldn't be able to exploit and to get the uranium at a very cheap price. Okay, because a good government would think first of developing the country, benefiting from the resources of the country, and not giving the resources for free to other countries, which is happening. This is what is happening now.
Now, the French company that dumped radioactive nuclear waste in Niger failed to inform locals of the real dangers of the waste. Now, the same company is eyeing one of the world's biggest uranium deposits at Imouraren, around 80 kilometers south of Arlit.
Areva, the French company which dumps dangerous nuclear waste in Niger, changed its name and now plans to extract uranium from another site under a new name, Orano. The change of name is meant to evade being held accountable for its previous crimes in Niger.
Yeah, this is how it shows how tricky they are, and it shows that they do not want to repair anything. They are guilty of something, but they do not recognize it, because if your company was named Areva and Areva committed a crime or made a mistake, so you just change the name and replace it by something new, so that in fact you can. They think that this is the way not to be taken to court. That's a strategy they're using. We saw it's not the first time we've seen this one. We look at the African currency, same thing. Yeah, you just change the name, but the system is still the same, and you carry on exploiting the people. So here we have the perfect example of how people are not good people, how they are bad people. Their intention is not good. They are guilty of what happened in the past with slavery, with colonization, and seem that they don't want to change. It is still the same system they are using, exploiting people.
Niger's economic development is hampered by a lack of consistent supply of electricity. Now, the country has the potential to meet all its energy needs and supply nuclear power to other neighboring African countries in need of electricity. The uranium in Niger was supposed to eradicate poverty, but it has only ended up enriching France and other European Union countries. Now, what needs to be done to tap into this potential without relying on exploitative Western powers?
Understood that Niger is providing 25% of the uranium that the EU needs. Okay, so we know that the first country is France. So France is kind of distributing the uranium to the rest of the EU, and this is where France gets its money. Okay, so it's everyone benefiting. So this is why they are all quiet about it, because they are all benefiting from it. Okay, so that's a big problem. And I think that, so to make things change, because I think the people of Niger, they waited too long. And once you have all these different armies, foreign armies in your country, it's very difficult to make things change. So I think, unfortunately, it's going to take them some time.
Well, unfortunately, our time is up for today. Our expert there says France and other Western powers are still looting Niger's uranium while endangering the lives of millions in the country and West Africa as a whole due to radioactive waste. I'd like to thank our guest, Mustafa Traore, for his insight today. Well, and that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. Goodbye for now.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
The director of the Russian Foreign Ministry's First Asian Department has recently said the de-dollarization of Russia-China trade is practically complete. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Tasnim News Agency, Georgi Zinoviev said the share of the U.S. dollar in mutual settlements between the neighboring nations has fundamentally slumped over the past 2 years. Zinoviev said the share of national currencies in Russian-Chinese payments is growing at an extremely rapid pace. At the beginning of 2022, it was hovering around 25%. Now it is exceeding 80%. He added that the volume of trading in the ruble-yuan pair on the Moscow exchange, MOEX, outpaced volumes in the dollar-ruble pair long ago. According to Zinoviev, Russian and Chinese businesses are rapidly moving away from the toxic Western currencies, opting for the ruble and yuan as more reliable and safe way of payment. The diplomat noted that Moscow and Beijing have developed vital tools to make it possible to facilitate all necessary transactions as much as possible. According to Markets Insider, China and several other countries have stepped up efforts to reduce their reliance on the greenback in international trade and investments in recent years, especially with the U.S. leveraging the dollar's global supremacy to slap economic and financial sanctions on countries including Russia and Iran. Global Data TS Lombard's Skyler Montgomery wrote in a note last month, "The dollar's reserve status is a privilege that gives the U.S. significant political, economic, and market influence. That weaponization of the dollar is part of the reason why Russia, China, and other BRICS nations have vied for an alternative to the dollar," she added. The success of the so-called de-dollarization movement is so far proven, with the greenback's share of worldwide payments hitting a record high. SWIFT payments involving the U.S. dollar rose to an unprecedented 46% in July, per Bloomberg. Meanwhile, BRICS nations are also exploring the option of creating a common currency to challenge the dollar. According to ASEAN Briefing, Indonesia and its central bank, Indonesia, have introduced a task force to promote the use of the rupiah in bilateral transactions. The country aims to reduce its reliance on the greenback and diversify payments on the international stage through local currency transactions. In addition to the bank, Indonesia's Financial Services Authority, the Deposit Insurance Corporation, and several ministries will also be part of the task force. Indonesia already undertakes local currency transactions with China, Japan, Malaysia, and Thailand. It is hoping to launch a cross-border payment system to encourage LCS transactions with Singapore by the end of 2023. For Indonesia, the move is in line with initiatives set out to reduce Southeast Asian reliance on the U.S. dollar for international trade. Indonesia, along with its ASEAN partners, signed an agreement during the 42nd ASEAN summit to push for better regional payment connectivity as well as the use of local currency transactions. Through this initiative, ASEAN member countries hope to increase trade within the bloc, improve regional value chains, and strengthen financial resilience. An initiative from ASEAN to improve its regional payment landscape and encourage local currency transactions has been the launch of the Universal Quick Response QR code. The central banks of the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, and Thailand have employed contactless QR code payment systems for goods and services between the countries, thus encouraging greater financial inclusion for consumers and MSMEs in the region. This also means a transaction in Thailand using an Indonesian app will be paid through a direct exchange between the rupiah and the BHT, bypassing the US dollar as an intermediary. Once the connection linkages have been completed, the central banks will seek to connect with other clusters around the world. Importantly, the initiative will encourage greater financial inclusion for the region's unbanked and underbanked population. It is estimated that 50% of Southeast Asia's population remains unbanked, meaning they do not have access to the most basic banking services. Further, for the region's MSMEs, which account for 99% of all businesses, the use of QR payment systems will enable them to seize more market opportunities in addition to investments to help them climb up the value chain.
Muhammad Iqbal, also famously known as Allama Iqbal, was a famous poet, philosopher, lawyer, and politician. Muhammad Iqbal is called the spiritual father of Pakistan, as he is believed to be the inspiration behind the historical Pakistan movement, in which he was one of the few leaders who first conceived the idea of Pakistan as a different nation for the Muslims. Iqbal is Pakistan's national poet, and his birthday is a public holiday in Pakistan. Muhammad Iqbal, also known as Iqbal Lahori, is considered one of the most important figures in Urdu literature, with literary work in both the Urdu and Persian languages. Although Urdu poetry draws heavily on Persian idiom and imagery, Iqbal found Persian more suited to his thought and temperament, and a better means of communication to a wider audience in the Indian subcontinent as well as other countries of the Muslim world. At the end, more than half and nearly two-thirds of Iqbal's poetry was in Persian language. Stay with us as this week's program looks into this extraordinary man's life and legacy.
The fragrance of the companion shall take a nation to the companion. Sometimes childhood memories appear before my eyes like a pale pall of imagination. Among those rippling images there sails the craft of my thought towards the shore of silence, to anchor in the harbor of its own. I dwell on my existence. I want to decipher the oriental thoughts and secrets, and to put an end to my bewilderment and self-alienation. I am a traveler, standing on the shore of thoughts. My aim, to pinpoint my lost identity. I am a traveler, walking on the road of human thoughts. My destination is the land of belief in oneself, in a bid to revive an identity which might no longer exist. It is an identity which, like a child's toy, is played with, but in a deadly way.
Some ignorant guys sent to the slaughterhouse of death every day thousands of innocent people because they are deeply buried in the marsh of their jejune ideas. In a way, there are two types of travels, a physical one, or going from one place to another, and a spiritual one, or transforming from one mood to another. Those embarking on the first type are many in number, and those embarking on the second type are much less. My travel is a mixture of both. Within the land and the sky, a travel in time to appreciate the ideas of an Eastern philosopher, namely Allama Muhammad Iqbal, the thinker, that if his thoughts were well understood, we would not witness the ignorant behaviors by Takfiri groups that are far from Islamic injunctions and humanity these days. Allama Iqbal wrote great mysteries in his books for his son, Javed Iqbal, and all others. As an old man, Javed knows it well whom his father was addressing. Javed talks to him like this.
Right now, I am 90 years old. You don't address people of my age. You address young people. You like them to believe what I say. I personally cannot fully understand you. I follow a path not wanted by you. Talk to me, who is 90 years old. You feel the elderly usually talk in a desperate way. You advise that one should not be desperate. The right man is hidden in you. Go on with your search. He will surely appear. You are saying the same thing. You have not visited me. I did my best. I searched for 90 years, but I did not find that right man. Where is he then? Tell me if you know.
I begin my journey right from here to the city of Sialkot, the birthplace of Iqbal. Perhaps in this travel, I would be able to show some special features of that righteous man. Today, Sialkot is a city in Punjab, Pakistan. The city, when Iqbal was born, was part of India.
Oh, you who are familiar with me, come with me to the childhood alleys. Tread on memory's pathway. Come with me to my intimate's alley. In my childhood home, on roofs quite stranger to all noises. May they be merrily remembered. The period of harmony with existence and excellence. The pleasant period of being with a companion, with all its liveliness. During all the year's generous moments, those alleys full of love, the splash of pure wafers.
Here is the very room wherein Iqbal was born, on the 9th of November, 1877, at 5:14 a.m. The house here was built by his grandfather, Sheikh Muhammad Rafiq. He was the first to occupy the house. On the 6th of February, 1861, he bought three small rooms and a house near here until Iqbal was born. Later, Iqbal's elder brother came here. The house has undergone no change since then.
Iqbal's ancestors were high-ranking Brahmins of Kashmir. They converted to Islam 500 years before Iqbal was born. The family was called Siparu, meaning educated. His father was a cloth dealer. Nur Muhammad's shop was frequented by great thinkers of Islamic sects. His mother, Imam Bibi, was also a religious woman. Iqbal had one brother and four sisters, all of them his senior.
Rooms were built before anything else in 1861. Iqbal's family prepared the first room for the wives. There, in that room, you see a cradle and a chair.
Encouraged by his father, Muhammad Iqbal learned the Quran from his very childhood in Hissam al-Din Mosque of Kashmiris. Basic lessons were learned at home, as Iqbal says this was the best period of his lifetime, because under his father's support, his thinking foundations became established. Sialkot's graveyard tells years later, when his father died, the story of Iqbal's attachment.
So many times I've asked myself, what is existence? From where does it take root? What a secret it is that has attracted thinkers' attention. I could not find answers to those questions. Then, many years later, when my thoughts expanded, I traveled back to my childhood to find answers to my questions. There it was my father who decided on the shape a thing should take. Years later, when unknown things became clear to me, I came to understand Mir Hassan's teachings. He talked to me about the Book of Life, but he did not mention the book's title. A condition set before me by him was this: to learn new sciences, Europeans learn. It is only then that you come to know what the value of the Book of Life is. He was quite right. Years later, with all my heart, I came to fully know the Book of Life. The Book of Life, the Holy Quran, whose wisdom is eternal and solid. It is an illustration for life secrets. Its power makes the unfaithful faithful. To mankind, it is the only message. The bearer of it will enjoy the mercy of both worlds. Bandits turn into leaders just through its memorization. They become pious just with the help of this very book. He whose heart's pulsation is a result of the book's warmth, his restless way finds comfort just as does a pearl. Should you want to live a Muslim life, only through the Quran is this possible.
Sialkot, a city in northeastern Punjab province, located at the foot of the snow-clad Kashmiri mountain. It was here, in this crowded city, where Allama Iqbal's first educational basis took root. Having received his first training by father and such a great teacher as Molina Mir Hassan, the young Muhammad entered Scotch Mission School to start his official education therein. The school's premises, against passage of centuries, keeps the same shape as it used to have.
He finished his high school here in 1891. Then in 1893, he completed his 10th grade, and it was here where he finally ended his high school education in 1895 and got his high school diploma.
How Having finished his high school in Sialkot, Muhammad Iqbal found the city too small to give him an opportunity to fly higher up in the sky. Muhammad was 18 when he finished his pre-university courses with honors, receiving 2 academic gold medals. Admitted on a scholarship, he left Sialkot for Lahore as advised by his teacher Mir Hassan. Lahore was a city southwest of his birthplace, 125 kilometers away from it. Then Muhammad Iqbal went to Punjab University, one of Pakistan's oldest universities, established in 1882 by the British ruler of the Indian subcontinent in Lahore. There, the instruction language was English, though some lessons were taught in Urdu. Young Iqbal of Sialkot went there to continue his education. Very soon, he got so famous throughout the world due to his thoughts and his Persian Urdu poems. Known as Iqbal Lahori, he was destined to get his BA and MA here and compose his earliest poems.
Allama Iqbal bilashuba hamari islami duniya ka.
Undoubtedly, Iqbal is, for us in the world of Islam, a clear metaphor and a great name. Iqbal found an Islamic world, a special thought. At the present time, we are living in a place so blessed as it witnessed Iqbal, the learned, for 5 years. At a time when Iqbal arrived here from Sialkot to enroll for BA, the state university here had this one dormitory only. Iqbal lived here for 5 years. I mean, his presence here lasted about 5 years. He then enrolled for MA in philosophy. He completed his MA.
Iqbal, as it seems to me, went through 2 periods in his life, a wisdom period and a love period.
During the time Iqbal was still in the subcontinent, and when he had not yet left for the West, he was naturally well acquainted with Western philosophy, had deeply studied Hinduism and Islamic thoughts.
At that time, Iqbal was quite familiar with Indian mysticism, and the traces of that school of thought can be found in his poems.
He studied in depth our religion, and with such a deep knowledge, he left for the West.
There was no ending to the stories of my restlessness and abandoning similar places. I was 28 when, recommended by my teacher, Sir Thomas Arnold, I left for Europe to continue my studies. Having a master's degree in philosophy, I had taught at the Oriental College, but going to England and starting study at Cambridge University for a doctorate in philosophy changed everything. Studying at Cambridge secured me opportunities to know better and more about Western philosophers. At the same time, I enrolled at the Faculty of Law to be able to get permission to act as attorney. The rest had no meaning to me. For that very year, I traveled to Hamburg, Germany, to do more research and finish my doctoral dissertation. For a whole year, I worked so hard to get fully familiar with philosophical foundations and to get my doctoral thesis finished. At that time, I met much of well-known philosophy teachers, such as the famous professor of philosophy, Mac Nagrad, and the famous Orientalist, Reinhold Elien Nicholson.
He continued his university studies in Heidelberg, Germany, and became familiar with the thoughts and ideas of such philosophers as Nietzsche, Fichte, Schopenhauer, and the like. There were similarities between his thoughts and the thoughts of those learned men.
Iqbal continues to say that he was changing and thinking those days.
Interestingly enough, Iqbal was influenced by Western philosophers. He adopted their thoughts and opinions. He received ideas from them, but mixed them with his own to create an independent thought system and called it own philosophy.
Having received his Doctor of Philosophy, Iqbal returned at the age of 31 to Lahore. Never did he hesitate to return home, contrary to some students of that time. He left England quickly. He was then licensed to practice attorneyship and became a member of Lahore Bar Association. 3 years later, he became a lecturer in philosophy at Lahore University. He resigned after a while to exclusively practice as an attorney. This way, he was able to freely publish his thoughts. He continuously thought about finding a way to awaken Muslims taken captive by colonialism.
All my life has been coincident with the Indian subcontinent's darkest days. British colonialism and now World War I. India was dominated by colonialism since the 18th century. But as World War I began in August 1914, a new form of cruelty began to cover my land. Indians went to fight a war wherein they had played no role. They were killed and killed for people who themselves were the main factor in bringing ruin and destruction to the whole world. Description of troubles brought about by those calamities is actually impossible.
In 1910 and 1911, and after World War I, we see a number of liberation movements. Muslims rose against British and European colonizers. So Iqbal found himself on a well-defined route. He started composing revolutionary poems.
After World War I, in 1918, and the fall of the Ottoman Empire, something had to be done quickly to save people of the tyranny imposed on them. I knew that a worldwide caliphate was no longer practicable. There was no agreement between Islamic unity and blind religious prejudice or extreme nationalistic ideas as promulgated by colonial powers. Unwillingly, I engaged in political activities. I tried to raise public awareness to bring about self-reliance.
Allama ran for Punjab Parliament election. As he said, he hated political activities and Muslims' needs forced him to enter the political arena. Consequently, he joined the Muslim League Party. He succeeded to become an MP for Punjab province for 3 years. During that time, he tried to solve Muslims' problems. Iqbal used to talk on such problems.
Allama Iqbal ne
Allama Iqbal nurtured the wish for an independent Pakistan. He would say a new country, an Islamic country, would come into existence on the world map. The country's name, he would say, will be Pakistan. Iqbal did not give this name to a new country, but surely he had it as a Muslim country in mind.
During my lifetime, I liked those sleeping in the world of thought to wake up from their deep sleep. But sadly, the sleep is too deep. Therefore, I took refuge in the world of rhythmic words and meaningful poems to awaken the youths of this sorrowful nation in order to sail the craft of our thoughts to the shore of productivity. I was a young man when I found out that to weather horrible tempests and the enemy's lurking place, we had no way but recourse to the miracle of last time. The Holy Quran, the book with miraculous words, which can be used as the best means to awaken thought and exalt the belief in self. The book is most succoring, particularly to the youth. I, who despair of the sages of old, have a word to say touching the day to come. Render my speech easy unto the young. Make my abyss for them attainable.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The amount of money British households owe their energy suppliers jumped to a record £2.6 billion this summer due to surging wholesale prices and a rising cost of living. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to fuel poverty activists, hundreds of thousands of struggling households in the United Kingdom risk missing out on government help to pay their energy bills this winter if they fail to make an application for financial support. National Energy Action said about 800,000 bill payers missed out on an energy bill rebate of £150 last winter through the government's warm home discount after complex changes were made to the scheme. The fuel poverty charity said the changes meant that about 500,000 people were no longer eligible for the scheme despite receiving it in previous years, and a further 300,000 had missed out after being left baffled by the complexity of the new scheme. Peter Smith, a director at National Energy Action, said, "There were hopes that the warm home discount would help all eligible households automatically. While this is the case for some households, the need to apply to your supplier in Scotland or prove you live in a higher energy cost home in England and Wales is creating unnecessary complexity and an unfair postcode lottery. Peter Smith said many vulnerable households were being asked to provide an energy performance certificate, an EPC, as part of their application for government support. He said, an energy performance certificate, an EPC, can cost over £100 when the rebate is only worth £150 in itself. This is money the poorest people don't have, and too many people just give up hope of being helped. It's so frustrating for them and our advisers. After all, the people who are missing out are paying for the policy through their energy bills but still aren't benefiting. Households are expected to face a difficult winter as a result of the soaring cost of energy. From October, the level of government's energy price cap dropped to £1,834 a year for a typical annual dual-fuel energy bill, from the previous figure of £2,074 a year. However, bill payers are likely to remain under pressure after ministers ended a scheme that automatically paid all households £400 towards their energy bills last winter. In its place, the government claimed it will offer targeted support, including a £900 payment for those on means-tested benefits, £300 for pensioners, and an extra £150 for disabled people. These are in addition to the £150 payment available through the Warm Home Discount. Lisa Pollitt, an energy advisor at National Energy Action, said, due to changes to the Warm Home Discount scheme, I have spoken to too many people who can't afford their heating and who have missed out. People who are already saddled with unmanageable energy debts. Every day we're hearing harrowing stories of the cutbacks that these people are being forced to make. It's vital vulnerable households who are still eligible don't miss out on this energy crisis support again this winter. Figures published recently by the Office for National Statistics, the ONS, are expected to show that the headline rate of UK inflation fell slightly to 6.5% in September from 6.7% in August. While the fall in inflation in recent months has been welcomed by policymakers, it still remains well above the Bank of England's official target of 2%, keeping the pressure on households struggling with the rising prices in a prolonged cost-of-living crisis. The Bloomberg News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The amount of money British households owe their energy suppliers jumped to a record £2.6 billion this summer due to surging wholesale prices and the rising cost of living. With the increase in bad debt levels expected to continue, regulator Ofgem said recently it's considering adding a one-time adjustment to the April energy price cap to reduce the risk of suppliers going bust or leaving the market as a result of unrecoverable debt. Proposals under consideration would add an average of £17 to all bills. Claire Moriarty, the chief executive of Citizens Advice, said, worryingly, more households are running up energy debt during the warmer months, with some having to borrow money to try and keep the lights on. Claire Moriarty added, an increase in the price cap to pay for higher debt will make people's bills even more unaffordable. UK energy bills fell slightly in October, but households could still face rising costs in the coming months following the phase-out of government support. Estimates show that one in three homes will pay higher energy bills, putting pressure on the government to do more to help offset the cost of living pressure. Ofgem, the regulator, will now consult industry, consumer groups and the public. There have been calls from lawmakers and energy suppliers for a social tariff to be introduced to lower bills for vulnerable customers. In response, lobby group Energy UK said 14 energy suppliers have pledged to provide immediate assistance to households in debt, including substantial additional financial support. The group is calling on the government to commit to targeted financial support for British households on means-tested and disability benefits this winter. Daniel Portis, Deputy Director at Energy UK said, "We cannot solve this on our own. Even with every support option that suppliers have to offer, there is potential for many customers to struggle to pay their energy bills." British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered this story and tells us more. Brits were warned recently that they faced the reality of energy bills being as high or worse this winter than last year. Ofgem chief executive Jonathan Brearley delivered the stark message as he claimed the industry is fully focused on protecting households. Appearing before MPs in the House of Commons, Ofgem chief executive Jonathan Brearley said, "International markets were more stable than in 2022, when households struggled to cope with massive cost increases amid the Ukraine war. But Brearley cautioned that the absence of a huge government support package this winter meant that there was unlikely to be any relief. He told the Energy Security and Net Zero Committee in the House of Commons, "When I look across the market this winter and I think about how does that play out for us this winter, I should start by saying we have a full focus on making sure customers are protected this winter. There is some positive news. The market is more stable, it is less volatile, and prices are lower than this time last year." Jonathan Brearley added, "This time last year we were anticipating and seeing prices at around £4,200 a year without government support. And last year government did step in to give tens of billions of pounds support to customers. But," he said, "there is a reality for customers this year. That support is not available anymore. So for many people, their energy bills will be very similar this year and possibly worse for some than they were last year."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. By referring to the work that Aryus carried out in those days during the Sacred Defense, we can now confidently say that Aryus can solve all of the country's problems today. When it is said, in changes of circumstances, the essences of humans become known, this is written in Nahjul Balagha, Wisdom, or Pieces of Aphorisms, number 217, it is not just about people. It is about societies as well. You can see the true colors of a society in difficult, problematic events. We did not know ourselves and neither did other people. The world did not know us either. During the Sacred Defense, we learned about ourselves. The others learned about us too. Those who were making so many false claims in the world realized who we are.
دنیا
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Another achievement of the Sacred Defense was safeguarding the country. It safeguarded the country. In other words, the sacred defense safeguarded the country against possible military attacks to a large extent. They kept saying that military action is also on the table. But it did not even budge from the table, because they knew that if they were to enter this field, they may be able to initiate it, but they will not be the ones to finish it. This is what the sacred defense demonstrated. This is another achievement. Deep, sincere faith, a strong, firm determination, the intelligence of the Iranian youth, the ability of the military and non-military elements to use initiative and innovation, and the ability to overcome global aggressors were the things that were revealed and seen about our nation and our soldiers during the sacred defense. Well, the nation itself recognized these things. Naturally, when we recognize and understand that we have these abilities, our hope will increase, our vitality will increase, and we will try to use these capabilities even more. We can use these capabilities in other fields as well. This is one of the important achievements of the sacred defense.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad. Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
From the river to the sea,
Palestine unity!
Anger is boiling in the streets of Pakistan over the United States and Israel. In a fiery expression of outrage, Pakistanis set ablaze the American and Israeli flags, signaling their vehement disapproval of their policies towards the innocent people of Palestine.
Anybody who denies the Holocaust, whether in North America or in Europe, is sent to jail. It is a crime. What Israel is doing is no less than a Holocaust in Palestine.
Oh, this is a greatest tragedy that Israeli aggression is being backed by United States and other Western countries. I think that's the time where world should protest against what Israel has been doing over the last 50, 60 years.
Political leaders, human rights activists, and religious scholars united in Islamabad for a series of rallies to condemn Israel's actions in Palestine. They marched in the streets and raised their voices to the world to play its role in stopping Israel from killing innocent men, women, and children in the Gaza Strip on a daily basis.
We are here to protest against the Israelis and anybody who's supporting them right now, be it Muslim leaders or America or anybody. And I would like to tell people that the word is not oppression anymore. The word is genocide. They're literally cleansing Palestine by killing their children specifically.